passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Glazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. What's up, Peter? How you doing?
Good. I'm doing well. It was nice to see your draft update, the new top 400 come out yesterday. And now we're like, it's crazy. We're kind of in the home stretch here of the college season, but still plenty of baseball to be played, a lot to play out when it comes to the draft. So super, super exciting times ahead.
Yeah, draft 400 is out. So if you want to look at the top 400 prospects in the class, you can check that out. We dropped the second in-season mock of the year. So things are really rolling. But today's podcast, we're going to focus on some data darlings, maybe some analytics sleepers. Peter, we have our hands on college data now that we're, like you said, a decent chunk into the college season, and some of these samples for these various metrics start to actually be a little bit more meaningful. So today we wanted to dive into these players, but I mean, typically on our podcast, we'll kind of have an agreed upon group of names or players that we want to touch on just so we can both prep. But today I thought it would be fun if we basically just picked out some names that were exciting to us for one reason or another based on some of this data. And we'll see how much crossover or lack thereof we have. I looked at players throughout the 400 list and wanted to pick some non-obvious names. It sounds like you had a similar strategy as well. So I think we should just alternate and go player by player and pick out some players who are either interesting for one pitch type or from some batted ball data, or maybe just the overall profile is maybe more appealing from an analytic perspective. So I'm excited to dig into this.
Yeah, I'm fired up. We were talking about it briefly pre-show and I was like, yeah, like I'm psyched with my method. I went like pretty deep here and like off the board, and you're like, I did the exact same thing. So I'm sure we'll have like at least like one or two guys that overlap. But
yeah, I think it could be fun either way. If we have five different players each, then we're basically educating each other on our guys we pick. And then if we did happen to have the same player, it'll be interesting to see if we came to some of the same conclusions or picked out the same traits. So do you want to go first? Or you want me to kick it off?
I'll let you go first. I feel like you always let me go first, so you can go first.
Okay, so for my first, and I have these guys in no particular order, but I wanted to jump into hitters, first of all. And we have exit velocity data, we've got some contact data, and some chase data. And I was just playing with some of the numbers and trying to filter pretty well-rounded hitters. And so when I was looking at this, this is all of the college hitters ranked on our 400 who we have data for. So this is most of the four-year players. There are a few guys that either we don't have a large sample on or play at parks that don't really have TrackMan, so that could make it. But it's basically 115, 116 players who qualify here. And I was looking at average exit velocity greater than or equal to 93 miles per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity greater than or equal to 110 miles per hour, a contact rate that's greater than or equal to 75%, and then a chase rate that's less than or equal to 25%. So it's power, it's bat to ball skills, and it's swing decisions. Like, who in the class is really well-rounded? If you do those thresholds, you wind up with four players who we have ranked in the first round: Charlie Condon, Brandon Montgomery, Nick Kurtz, Cam Smith. And there's one other player who we don't have ranked in that range. And that
I'm worried that you're going to guys fits this.
Not our first guy, but I came up with Zach Stewart here.
Oh, okay.
Missouri State outfielder. Is that who you had?
No.
Okay. I'm curious if I missed a player then who fits these traits. Cause I thought these were the only five players, but Zach Stewart, we currently have around the 110 to 120 range, kind of fourth, fifth round range. It does sound like there are some scouts who have him a little bit higher, but I thought it was notable that all the players who meet these various criteria are like slammed into the first round. And I wonder if Zach Stewart is a guy that maybe we should be paying more attention to. He's, like I said, an outfielder at Missouri State. He's hitting 333, 400, 705, 16 homers, 6 doubles. He's striking out at an 18% clip, walking at a 9% rate. It's a really powerful looking swing with a lot of bat speed. He's a very physical player. And I think maybe the one knock on the profile that I was looking at or looking over is he played in the Cape for 11 games and was not a great performer there. But I have to imagine just the batted ball results this spring will be really encouraging for some teams. Just putting him in that tier of players was pretty loud to me.
Yeah, one, again, the fact that he fits in that tier of players, given the criteria that you mentioned, is super impressive. I know he's been having an outstanding spring. He more than looks the part. It's a big league looking body. He's got a ton of power from the left-handed side. It would grade out as plus. And I think for me, the most encouraging thing has been the cleanup in the approach and swing and miss. Last year, it was a little bit of a bugaboo. Struck out 69 times across 222 at-bats and really, really struggled on the Cape, which, again, small sample, but the Ks were really high and the swing and miss was a legit issue. So the fact that he's been able to clean that up while not sacrificing any of his production and continuing to maintain that power, that's been great to see.
Yeah, and I do think there are still some swing and miss questions against the secondaries in particular. He has really not missed a lot of the fastballs, and so I imagine that has kind of helped him get that contact rate to above that 75% range. And I will say, like, of those, the Condon, Montgomery, Kurtz, Cam Smith group, his contact rate is near the bottom of that range, but he still clears all those thresholds that I mentioned. The chase on both changeups and sliders has maybe been a little bit more aggressive than you want, but overall he's been really solid all around and was a name that I'm now more intrigued with just seeing the other players he fits with in those categories.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he fits best, like, again, I think he eventually goes in that like fourth to sixth round type range. Maybe a team reaches a little in the third, but he's like fourth to sixth or seventh for me. So the fact that he fits in that criteria and those are the names he's with, that's pretty loud.
Yeah. All right, let's see who's your first player. Go in any order you want.
Okay, so I'll stick with a hitter. I have two hitters. Two of my five are hitters. And I'm going to go with...
This is perfect because I have three hitters and two pitchers.
So. Oh, excellent. Okay, so we've got five and five. I'm going to go with Rafe Parrish at Lehigh. Again, I said I would go deep cut. This guy is
pretty deep cut.
So this year at... I don't know why I keep saying Elon instead of Lehigh. This year at Lehigh... Hitting 385 with 11 doubles, 6 home runs, 32 walks to 22 Ks, peak exit velocity, max EV of 115, 90th percentile exit velocity of 109, average exit velocity of 95.2. And then you look at a little bit of the underlying data. He's got an 88% overall contact rate, including 95% against fastballs. Mm. The approach has been really advanced. It's a chase rate of just 17%. And then you look at the bat to ball skills and his ability to be on the barrel. He's got a 96% in zone contact rate, including 98% against fastballs. So he's tearing it up. I know the competition will be held against him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it'll kind of, it'll have him in a certain range draft wise. For me, like, he's a day two type of prospect, like 7th to 10th round, probably closer to the 10th round. There's, I think, above average power from the left side. It's a little bit of a funky operation in the box. You look at it, it's not the most aesthetically pleasing swing. But again, he's been tearing it up. He's also got a plus arm over at third base. He pitched a little bit. Like, he's not a two-way guy by any means, but the arm strength translates over to third base where he's held his own, and he's been a good defender over there. So he's a really, really intriguing one to me.
Yeah, everything that you just mentioned sounds really exciting. I'm trying to look and see what his launch angles are because he's hitting the ball really hard, but he also, his ground ball rate has been above 50% every year at Lehigh, and his home run totals have never been extraordinary. He hit 3 as a freshman in 2022, or I'm assuming that's his freshman season, but correct me if I'm wrong. He hit 6 in 2023. He's at 6 so far in 2024. But yeah, all the contact, all those EVs sound really exciting. And it just, he doesn't hit the ball in the air a ton of the time, just 27% fly ball rate at the moment. So I wonder if this is a guy who, if you can either change the swing, I don't want to just blindly suggest a swing change, but somehow get him in the air a little bit more often, maybe you would see more over the fence pop on the kind of surface level stats. This is a fun one.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to tap into with him. And again, he's got a good body. He's 6'3", with some physicality to him. I think he can stick over at third base. And again, like, I know it's Patriot League. The pitching is extremely, extremely light in that conference. And there isn't a whole lot of like wood bat track record here. It was a respectable summer for him in the Coastal Plain League. Nothing insane, but I'm curious to see where he can kind of, or where he's played himself into at this point. I wouldn't be shocked to hear him go later on day two or really, really early on day three, where I think, you know, if you can get him on day three, like that I think is a steal.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'll go on to my next player. I'll stick with my other hitter, get both my hitters off the board here. So this is, again, looking at players ranked on our top 400 currently. I wanted to see how many players were top 25 just across the board in some of the batted ball metrics. So this player ranks top 25 among 116 players on our BA 400 in average exit velocity, 90th percentile exit velocity, peak exit velocity, and contact percentage. This player is Blake Burke at Tennessee. So this is going to be probably my most prominent name here. We have him inside the top 100, probably a name most of you guys are familiar with, but it almost, when you look at the batted ball data, and I guess I will put a caveat here, because the other player that I'm going to compare him to has a smaller sample than many of the other players here. But it almost feels like a bit of a Jack Caglione profile. Caglione is at Florida. They don't use TrackMan there. They use YakerTech, I believe. So his sample of batted ball events is just a little bit lighter. And so I think his data maybe is a little bit noisier. But both these guys have elite top end exit velocity numbers. Both of them have done a nice job with the contact department. Burke more so than Caglione, actually. And the one kind of area that you have to question with their offensive profile is the chase, the swing decisions. Both of them are above 30% in chase rate. And both are first base corner types offensively. So Burke is not a guy that I expect to go in the first round, but he's also a player who's having a career year. And I feel like hasn't gotten as much maybe positive scout feedback as I would expect. On our last round, he actually got sort of split camp feedback. Some people wanted us to trend him down just because it's a first base only profile. Some people wanted us to move him up. But right now, he's hitting 412, 474, 817, 14 homers, 20 doubles. He's near the Division I lead in doubles hit. The strikeout rate for him has consistently gone down in each of his seasons with Tennessee. Started at 30% as a freshman, cut it to 17% last year, and he's looking at a 13.5% strikeout rate as we record this podcast. So I just think it's a really fascinating overall profile. The power is quite obvious with him. I think he was a guy that you mentioned on our Best Tools podcast over the offseason is just like best raw power in the class. And the fact that he's made the gains that he has made in the contact department is encouraging to me. So he's a fun one. It wouldn't be shocking to me if he wound up going in the second round. We've got him in the third round range right now, but I was impressed with his numbers.
That's a great one. And on top of, like, you hit on the key point for me, at least, like, the raw power is tremendous. It's a borderline 70. It's a 70 for me to the pull side. But the hit ability has increased. Like, this year, again, you talk about the slash line and the contact rate improvements, but he's currently riding a 31 game hitting streak, which is super, super impressive. And again, like, he's probably a second to third round type for me. Like, I think the third round is a perfect spot for him. I don't know if I'd quite pull the trigger on day one, which might be a little bit of a hot take. Like, I would not be shocked in the slightest to see him go in the second round, but probably a third rounder. The raw power is tremendous. And yeah, he's going off and kind of leading the charge on a really, really deep Tennessee team. So that's a good one.
Yeah. And he ranked, again, this is 116 college hitters here who are on our BA 400. He ranked sixth in average exit velocity, fifth in 90th percentile, fifth in peak, and then 21st in contact rate. So just pretty, pretty impressive across the board. Again, with just the chase being a metric that would rank towards the bottom of this group of players. So if he can make strides in that department, you're looking at a pretty well-rounded hitter. And you probably need to be to go this high if you're a first base only type, but he's, I think he's lived up to the expectations for him and maybe exceeded them to this point in the season. So that's my second hitter.
That's a great one. I'll keep the hitting trend going. And I'll also go with another smaller school guy who this year has, I think, only helped his stock. And that's John Gazdar from Austin Peay. He was a guy that
we're hitting on both the programs that are like leading the country in homers and runs per game.
I know the fighting Lyle Miller Greens. Gazdar was a guy that I became pretty enamored with last summer on the Cape. He had just a brief 19 game stint for Hyannis. I saw him a few times, but he was just a really fun player to watch in general. He's smaller in stature. The impact, like, he is very much a hit over power guy. I know that this year has been his most productive year when it comes to power prowess, but like, you're buying the hit tool and the hit ability here. And for me, it wouldn't be outland, like, he's a plus hitter for me. And like the feel for the barrel is excellent. It's a kind of an interesting load as he drops his hands, and it's not, you know, the smoothest looking thing, but it's an operation that works and it's comfortable for him. Nice compact swing with quickness in his hands. Like, he just sprays line drives all over the field, and the hit ability and the hand eye coordination are the calling cards. Like, this year, it's a 93% in zone contact rate, 92% against fastballs, 95% against sliders. And then on the Cape this past summer, and again, we're talking about a much, much smaller sample size, but his in zone contact rate was 97%, and he didn't have a single in zone swing and miss against any secondary offering. And he's going to stick on the infield. He's a sound defender with an average arm. Like, he held his own over at shortstop, but I think the actions and overall defensive skill set project best over at second base. And the baseball sense is advanced. So is his feel for the game. And he's been a big time spark plug and igniter for any lineup that he's been a part of. And I initially came into this year thinking he'd be a nice, like, early day three guy. Mm-hmm. For me right now, he fits probably in like the sixth to eighth or ninth round range, like, yeah, sixth to seventh if you're trying to save money.
We've got him ranked like 261 right now, so it's right in that range you're talking about.
Yeah, like sixth to eighth, and like definitely staying pat, if not like trending slightly up. The ceiling can only get so high for someone like of that type of profile. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be a really, really nice day two get for someone, because I think he's going to continue to hit, and you get a sound defender again over at second base, and I'm really buying the barrel awareness and hitability.
Yeah, if you just, again, I'm looking at a list of our 400 ranked college hitters here. If you sort by contact percentage, he is fifth in that statistic with an 88.5% overall contact rate. The only players in front of him are Woody Haydeen at UC Irvine, Kevin Bazell at Texas Tech, Sam Antonacci at Coastal Carolina, and then Griff O'Farrell at Virginia. And if you look at his like top end exit velocity numbers, they're towards the top end of that group, I would say. So pretty impressive contact traits with John Gazdar, who's hitting 380, 460, 602 this year with just a 5% strikeout rate. It's been a phenomenal year for him.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. So, and again, like, you bring him up in the same breath as those names, and you also talk about how his impact might be a tick up. I think he's going to be he's not really unknown anymore. He was kind of coming into this year, but will be a really nice pickup for someone.
Okay, well, let's get into my first pitcher. And this is, I would say, the first one where I was really thinking that we might both have him on our list of players to talk about, because he just jumped so massively.
I know what you're taking.
So I'm going with the obvious guy. I tweeted it out the other day, but he's the leader in Stuff Plus, not only with our players ranked on the 400, but all college pitchers that we have data on. And this is Stuff Plus overall, not any specific pitch. Dylan White, with us at Baseball America, has his internal Stuff Plus metric that he was so kind enough to put on all these college players. And his 137 Stuff Plus number is far and away the best among college pitchers. I don't think there's another college pitcher that even cracks 130. And I think a large part of this is the slider that he throws. So Bridger Holmes is like actually a big pitcher listed at 6'4", but he throws from a sidearm slot and he's throwing a ludicrous sweeping slider 74% of the time. The pitch averages 80 mile per hour. It has 21.1 inches of horizontal break and 2,900 RPM spin rate. That those numbers just jumped off the page to me initially. And I wanted to go try and find like how many other big leaguers are throwing sweepers with this much horizontal break. And I don't know how quickly this will stabilize for the big leagues. We haven't been going for a ton at the major league level, but I could only find four pitchers this year whose sweepers average 20 inches or more in horizontal movement. Those four were Red Sox right-handed pitcher Greg Weissert, Rays right-handed pitcher Kevin Kelly, Astros right-handed pitcher Sean Dubin, and then Mets right-handed pitcher Michael Tonkin. Of that group, he would rank third behind Weissert and Kelly with 21.1 inches of horizontal movement. And it's just an insane-looking pitch that comes from a tough angle. He's generating a 42% miss rate with the slider that he's using, again, three-quarters of the time. And he also pairs the slider with a low 90s two-seam fastball that has 20 inches of movement in the other direction. So it's a really east-west profile and just a unique look. And I imagine teams are going to be all over this specific pitch for him, but it's freakish stuff and an unusual at bat and profile.
Yeah. So we have our first overlap of the day. Okay. Holmes was an arm that I had. But yeah, you hit on everything with him. Like I saw the Oregon State analytics account tweet something like, I don't know, maybe late February, early March. And it was like a graphic that's become so popular now in college baseball where it shows like the pitch data on an individual pitch. And I think he threw one of his sliders and I think he had like 26 or 27 inches of sweep. And I was like,
that's insane.
And I was like, who is this kid? And I go on to Synergy and I see he's also like, from that slot too, like the velocity is magnified. Like it's super impressive that he's like 91, 93, touching 94 from that sidearm / submarine slot. Like,
yep.
And I was like, God bless, this kid is unbelievable. And like you said, super east west profile, the slider averages over 20 inches of sweep, two seamer averages over 20 inches of run. Like it is as uncomfortable in a bat as you can probably find in college baseball. And he's a guy that was kind of unknown. Like he's a JUCO kid. He came from Feather River College, had a nice summer in the West Coast League this past year with Springfield. And he's been tearing it up for Oregon State. He's been their best bullpen arm, ERA of just 1.2, 31 Ks and 21 innings pitched. He's around the strike zone. He's got good feel for his arsenal and he's got really, really advanced feel for that slider that he can spin so well. And that's a slam dunk plus pitch. And I think that the fastball from down there, just given how it plays, and you also look under the hood a little bit, that's also an above average pitch. So it's a reliever profile, no doubt, which is a little bit of a ding, but it's such a unique one that again, like day two is not totally out of the question. Like you look at the track record of best submarine guys that go in the draft, submarine sidearm slot, like Noah Ruin last year, when I think in the 13th round of the Dodgers, he is probably the closest thing we've seen to Holmes recently, kind of that low 90s, sits low 90s up to 94 with a solid slider. And then Jackson Kelly from Mercer, excuse me, a couple of years ago, I think won the 12th round of the Rangers. So late day two, early day three for me with Holmes, but I'm so glad that you mentioned him because he's one of like, I don't know if you can call him a cheese ball, but I'm really, really excited about him. And curious to see what he can do against in pro ball and against wood bats, because it's just a demonic arsenal.
It is, and he has thrown the sweeper for strikes at maybe a better rate than I would expect. It's a 64% strike rate with the pitch now, although I guess I probably would need to bear down more on in zone location with that pitch versus overall strike rate, because I imagine he'll get a decent amount of chase. It's about a 30% chase rate with the pitch, walk rate around 10%, which feels fine for a reliever. And like you said, I think he definitely is a reliever at the next level, but for teams who really want to create a unique look out of the pen, this would be a fun guy to do it with. So yeah, unsurprising that Bridger is our first guy who we both had on the board, but certainly in that case, glad he's a player that we're talking about, because it seems like an obvious data darling.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, 100%. I'll keep the pitching trend going here.
Okay.
And maybe come up with, or maybe drop a name here that would be another steal. And that is LP Langevin from Louisiana.
Yeah, I wanted to do LP, but we had talked about him actually outside of this conversation for this specific podcast, and I figured he'd be a guy you were targeting, so I wanted to not double down. So
I was going to say,
because between Bridger and between LP, we might have the most fascinating slider and fastball, if that's where you're going to go with this. So take it away, Peter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, we hinted at it yesterday in like our little Slack conversation. So like, if I didn't drop a hint about him, it would 100% be another overlap. But LP Langevin, he's a guy down at Louisiana. He's been outstanding for the Raging Cajuns in relief, 42 and two thirds innings pitched, 74 Ks, 2.53 ERA. And like you said, we have the extremely unique slider with Bridger Holmes, and we have a really, really intriguing fastball here with LP Langevin. He throws it, I believe, 79% of the time, and it has just a whopping 47% miss rate. And
I think that miss rate is like near, if it's not the best in the country, it has to be one of the very best miss rates for a fastball in the country.
I'm pretty sure I checked last night, and I'm pretty sure that it's that it's number one.
Okay.
In terms of fastball miss, and it sits like 92, 95. He's been up to 96 regularly with it, but the traits to it, and like you said, and this was something that you also brought up offline yesterday, but the traits are really, really interesting. He averages over 18 inches of ride to it, but also over 17 inches of run. And the vertical attack angle is, minus 4.29, which is also super, super unique. And he's just overpowering hitters with it. Unsurprisingly, it gets the most swing and miss, elevated into the arm side. Like, he could signal it's coming and guys would still swing under it. And it just, I mean, it's a slam dunk plus fastball. The pitch usage is a little bit similar, and I'm like pulling like very deep cut guys here. The pitch usage is really similar to Will Privett from College of Charleston.
Yeah.
And where he was also like 80 to 10 fastball curveball. Langevin throws a slider, but whereas like 80% fastball, and it's just like an invisible. I honestly like Langevin's a little bit better than Privett. And he's this big, durable righty. He threw five perfect innings against a really, really good coastal offense last weekend. I think that he's a guy that,
yeah, if you guys read our college hot sheets, you probably got a little preview of Langevin, because he was a member of the hot sheet for that performance this week.
He was, and again, like, reliever all the way for me, but I think that he's a guy that recently, even just in the last couple of weeks, has gained a lot of traction here. I know he's ranked 301st on the newly minted 400, but it would not shock me at all to see a team pull the trigger on him in like that fifth to eighth round range. Just the way he's been throwing the ball and how unique of a profile it is.
Yeah, and I don't I saw the pitch movement data on the fastball, and I had to do a double take. I don't know how common it is to have this much riding life along with this much horizontal break. I feel like typically you see a guy who either has a lot of ride and then maybe more normal looking horizontal movement, or the other way around. If it's more of like a sinker profile, the horizontal break numbers are pretty big. Similar again to Bridger Holmes. He's got pretty impressive horizontal break numbers, but he doesn't have nearly this sort of ride on the pitch. Just that combination of, I would say, it's, at least to me, and I'm not like the expert on pitch data and pitch movement and stuff, but 18 inches of ride, 17 inches of horizontal, while averaging 93, 94 from that really flat attack angle. And then he also just has probably above average pure spin rates with the fastball overall. It's just a lot of elements that I feel like data guys and analytics people in front offices are really going to be drawn towards. And he also has just pitched well and gotten good results. It's a 42% strikeout rate so far. Again, mostly he's been out of the bullpen, like you were saying, reliever profile, 2.53 ERA, and a 12% walk rate. But it has to be one of the very most intriguing fastballs in the entire draft class.
Yeah, 1,000%. If not, yeah, I was going to say definitely one of the most intriguing. And then super, super sneaky with him. He's only thrown 51, and he throws it 71% of the time, or excuse me, 7% of the time. He mixes in an interesting like mid to upper 80s changeup that, again, the sample size here is really, really small. But it averages over 17 inches of fade to the arm side, and that's his changeup. Like I looked at the video last night of it, and it's got a chance to be a decent secondary offering. Like he maintains his arm speed well. He throws it with conviction. He doesn't really throw it, but he turned over a couple of really good ones that had a ton of late fading life. So the overall package here is super, super intriguing. And like, I think there is so like we talk about this year and like the narrative to this year's draft is, you know, after the top 8 to 10 guys, it's a pretty steep fall off. It could go so many different ways and all this. Like, I think there is so much value and it places more of a value on like these day 2, day 3 guys that you can potentially scoop up because I think everyone that we've mentioned here so far has a chance to look like a really smart pick in like 2 to 3 years, if not even sooner.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will go on to my next player, unless you have more to say on Langevin, who also just has a great baseball name.
Oh, I was going to say, I try and say his name as much as I can because like it's a great name.
I was going to say Langevin, but Langevin is way cooler sounding, and I hope that's actually the right pronunciation because, yeah, definite. Like at least 60 on the name.
100%. I cheated a little bit. I watched like an ESPN Plus stream and they were saying Langevin, so I didn't. Sweet. That's not me being advanced in pronunciation. So,
well, that's you being advanced in your research at the very least. Well, I'll go on to player 4, and I don't think that you'll have him because part of the reason I picked him is because his usage this year has just been fascinating to me. But when I was looking at the Stuff Plus numbers for pitchers, he actually graded out pretty well. And I'm going with William and Mary right-hander Nate Knowles.
Oh, nice.
So he is a starting pitcher for William and Mary. And I'm not sure if it was last week's hot sheet or the week before we wrote about him because he had a really strong outing. And I was looking at his numbers and I thought there was some sort of an error because it was like week 8 or 9 and he had like 12 starts under his belt. And I was like, that's not right. Like what's going on here? But no, that is accurate. He currently leads the country with 14 starts. He's on essentially a 5-day rotation. He's pitching on basically a pro schedule. All of his outings, he's pitched between 3 and 5 innings. He's never gone more than 5 full innings. All of his outings, he's thrown between 50 and 80 pitches. And this is not like something new for William and Mary and Nate Knowles specifically. He had a similar usage pattern in 2023. This year, he's just been better. Really across the board, he's got a 1.93 ERA, 51 innings, career high strikeout rate at 35%, walk rate in line with last year's at 10.4%. But then his Stuff Plus numbers are actually really good as well. Among all of our college pitchers ranked, he was 12th with a 116 Stuff Plus across the board. And I think this is less because of like one dominant offering, although I think the fastball probably grades out pretty well. But all three of his primary pitches, his fastball, his cutter, and his curveball, each of those pitches have a 30% miss rate or better. And yes, his 35% fastball miss rate after talking about LP Langevin might not sound great, but that's a really impressive rate for a fastball. He's got a 31% miss rate on the cutter, 45% miss rate on the curveball. The metrics on the fastball are what you typically look for. I still have Langevin's pulled up. Let me pull up Knowles, but his sits in like low to mid 90s. He's touching 95, sitting 92, nearly 21 inches of IVB, 2400 spin, and also a flat approach angle with a negative 4.37 vertical approach angle. So like, that's a pretty exciting riding fastball. And then he pairs it with a cutter in the upper 70s that he's getting a lot of miss on. And then he's changing pace and speed with a upper 70s downer curveball that has 19 inches of vertical break and solid, but I would say unspectacular spin rates. But he's just been fascinating for a number of reasons. Deep arsenal. He's got a couple other pitches he throws, but those are the three primary ones. And just seeing this sort of usage with him is fascinating. Maybe it's allowed him to sort of optimize and not get dinged up in later innings where other pitchers maybe get a little more damage done against them. So it's been good and made the numbers look impressive. But there's a lot to like here, and I just think it's cool how William Mary is using him.
Yeah, it's a super intriguing combination, I think, of stuff and pitchability, because the stuff is loud with him. You obviously mentioned how he grades out on the model, the pitch metrics. The swing and miss he's getting with his entire arsenal. But this is a kid also who knows how to pitch. Like, he's consistently around the strike zone. He's always in attack mode. Little bit of an undersized righty, which is a ding to the profile. But again, like, you talk about how value, like, even just talking through all of these guys, and we're not going to hit on all of the like data darlings and day two or day three steals here. Like, it has me excited about a handful of teams here are going to get, I think, really good players here on day two and day three. And Knowles, I'm curious to see just how high he ends up going. Again, for me, similar to a lot of these guys, like, he's a day two type. I know he signed a pitch on the Cape pre-draft, which you really don't. It's hard to project who's going to show up to the Cape and who's not going to nowadays, just for a handful of reasons. Like, his workload has been pretty extreme, as you said. He started 14 games already, and we're in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how people view that workload, because he hasn't thrown more than 79 pitches in a single outing, and it is more limited within those starts. Just 51 total innings so far, so it will be interesting to see how he's used. Currently, we've got him in like day three range, but he's also young for the class too. He won't turn young for the college class. He won't turn 21 until September, I believe, after the draft. So that'll be a nice boost for him for teams that really prioritize age, although for pitchers, maybe it's less meaningful.
Yeah. And there's a pretty, like, I'd say lengthy ish track record here too, outside of a spotty / modest true freshman year at William and Mary. There's a really impressive track record here between, again, this year and last spring, but also really good summer in the Valley League. And then a really good stint in the NECBL, which, outside of the Cape, could be the second best summer league in the country. And if he goes to the Cape and makes 3 to 4 really good starts, like, he's 1,000% going to get popped, I think, most likely like later on day two, potentially even in the middle portion of it. So another really fun name to follow both in the next few weeks as we close out the regular season. And then also keep tabs on him this summer if he throws, because he'll be facing a lot of high end talent, and he's got a chance to make himself, I think, a lot of money.
Yep.
Well, a lot of money to an extent, but I digress. My last guy, I don't know how much of a necessarily like data darling he is, but he is someone that I just like wanted to find an excuse to talk about. So I may have been like fishing a little bit here.
There are no rules on the podcast, Peter, so you're all good.
But he's a guy that I think and know that you like as well. He's a smaller school guy. He is more, I think,
a pitcher. I'm trying to figure out who you're going for before you name him, but keep going.
He's a name that I dropped in Slack before, which is really not much of a hint, because like I'll just like pop into Slack and like throw like a grenade and then leave. But so he's at Presbyterian College. That'll probably give it. Yes.
Yeah, good one.
Right-handed pitcher Daniel Egan, 6'4" righty. This year he's been excellent for the Blue Hose, which is a double plus mascot name for me. 2.7 ERA, 79 Ks, so just 16 walks across 46 innings. He's been their Friday guy. Fastball up to 96, gets a lot of miss up in the zone. And when you look again, you kind of look at the data a little bit, it averages over 20 inches of ride to it, almost 21 inches of ride. And then he also, he supplements it with this huge downer curveball. It's got big time depth and also plenty of sharp downward teeth. It averages, again, almost negative 12 inches of vert to it. And he doesn't really spin anything particularly well. But again, I just think it's a really exciting 1-2 punch, and he's been performing really well, down at Presbyterian and turning some heads. And yeah, I think the fastball is a borderline plus pitch right now. And the curveball's got a chance to be above average. The changeup is interesting ish. I think he still needs probably a slam dunk third pitch going forward to stick in a rotation, but he's a guy that I know you got a lot of positive feedback on. He stuck out to me, and I was happy to see that the under the hood metric supported it as well. So
yeah, he was one of the biggest risers in our most recent update. We've got him right in that like top five, top six round range at 158 on the board. He took a pretty significant jump in stuff, just like pure velocity, not like stuff plus metric. He was throwing like 89, 90 and touching a few ticks above that in 2023. Split time as a starter and a reliever previously. Now it's a full-time starter, but he's been more in that 93 to 94 mile per hour range with the fastball, touching 96. The strikeout rate jumped with that. He's going from around 20% strikeout rate his first 2 years with Presbyterian. Again, in a split reliever starter role, now as a full-time starter, that rate is above 40% now, and he's still walking guys at a pretty solid clip too. So yeah, he's gotten a lot of good scout feedback, so it's nice to hear him as a guy that you're bringing up when we're talking about data guys. So it's pretty no matter what lens you're kind of looking at it from, you can find a reason to be excited about Daniel Egan.
Yeah, and you talk about track record, and his is pretty limited. Like you said, last year at Presbyterian, the sample size was small, but the numbers were less than stellar. And then as a freshman, they were rather modest as well. And like the only time that he really performed outside of this spring was this past summer in the Appy League, where 4.39 ERA, 24 Ks and 26 innings, nothing that like, at least on the back of the baseball card, is going to blow you away. So his leap this year has been pretty impressive to see. He's still young-ish, not super young, but he turned 21 just back in November. But again, like you said, the stuff really ticked up, the velocity ticked up, and the strike throwing has really improved. So there's a lot of stuff going in the right direction for Egan. So I'm curious to see if he can keep building off of it. Like I said, the third pitch is going to be important going forward, but the trend is his friend right now. So I think that he probably fits like, again, that fourth to seventh-ish round, or like middle of day two, I think is a good spot for him.
Yeah, glad you brought him up. He's a fun one. All right, I'm getting into player number five here. I'm curious if you will find out who I'm talking about before I drop his name. But this is another guy who does have some time on the Cape last summer, a pretty decent sample. He was not a great performer in the Cape. He goes to a smaller school that has produced a first round center fielder in the last few years with exciting tools and batted ball data. I don't think this player is at that tier, but he does have, I would say, really good feedback from scouts in general. And then I was pretty pleasantly surprised with where he looked, just looking at some of the batted ball data. We've got him in like right inside our top 300, I believe, at this point. It's a Virginia school. Not sure if you found out who I'm talking about yet, Peter, but the player is Fenwick Trimble, center fielder at James Madison.
Really good one. I wasn't able to pick up on it until you dropped the name, but that's another really,
I was fairly vague with it. But so I was looking at just top contact hitters, just filtering these sheets kind of just to look it over and see who jumps out. But Trimble ranked 11th among college hitters. Again, just college hitters on our board currently, with an 86.2% contact rate. And what really jumped out to me with all the players around him and him was like his top end exit velocity numbers were a lot more exciting. A lot of the hitters that you're going to see, if you're filtering a list by just contact rate are a lot of light hitting bats that don't really drive the ball hard. They just kind of throw the bat on the ball, make a lot of contact, don't have a lot of home run power. But of this group, if you look at like top 20 in contact and then sort by 90th percentile exit velocity or peak exit velocity, the list is basically Travis Bazzana, Carson Benj, and then Fenwick Trimble. Mm. So pretty good group of names there. Obviously Bazzana and Benj we expect to be in the first round, at various points in the first round. But if you sort by 90th percentile, Fenwick Trimble is actually second behind Bazzana and ahead of Benj. And if you look at just peak velocity, Benj is second and Trimble is third. But either way, like these three guys are all pretty exciting combinations of pure contact skills, but with a little more pop. And I thought that was encouraging because Trimble also has a pretty lean frame that you could probably project a little bit more strength and power coming in the future. So I wonder if he's going to be a guy who just gets closer to his peak exit velocity numbers with a bit more consistency in the future. Because if you just look at the average EVs, it's maybe not as exciting. It's right around 90 miles per hour. Carson Benj is 93, 94. Travis Bazzana is 95. So he's a little off the pace if you look at average, but the top end numbers were exciting to me. Like I said, the performance in the Cape last summer wasn't great, but he's hitting really well this spring for James Madison. He hit over 300 last year. He's hitting 363, 446, 569 this spring, 7 homers, 10 doubles, and 10 stolen bases. He moved from a corner to center field. There are solid grades on his defense, his arm strength, his running ability. Like nothing, I wouldn't say any crazy physical tools like Chase DeLauder, who is the guy I was trying to like tie him to in this. I don't think he's near that sort of tool set or physicality, but I do think he's got a pretty fun, well-rounded profile. And I was encouraged with the batted ball data.
Yeah. I'm happy you brought him up. I saw him last summer on the Cape, and you just look at the numbers on the surface. They're probably not going to blow you away and you might be kind of unimpressed by them, but there were a couple of stretches in the summer where he looked really good. Like later in June, he had a solid stretch of about 4 or 5 games. Then he had another solid stretch in like the middle of July. And then in the playoffs, he hit really well. I think he went 7 for 18 with a couple of home runs in the playoffs across 6 games. So he finished his summer on a strong note. Has obviously carried over, like you said, to this year where he's hitting 363 with 10 doubles and 7 jacks. Has cleaned up a little bit the approach and the miss. Like I think that, and you summarized him pretty perfectly, but the combination this year, especially of barrel awareness and also the impact he's able to generate, is pretty exciting. Like you mentioned, the max EV of like 111, he's got a 90% in zone contact rate. And I think also the cherry on top with him is like, he's got a great body. Like you said, it's a pretty lean, wiry 6'3", 200 pound kid. There's stuff to dream on here with him. And he's held his own in center field this year for James Madison, which is also really encouraging. He's not going to go in the range that DeLauder did, but like you talk about guys on like mid to late day two that are quality pickups, he fits the bill perfectly. And, I think that while there's no like crazy standout tool here, like I don't know if it's quite like performance over tools, because like I think there is stuff to be excited about here with Trimble. But he just does a lot of stuff well. Like nothing is insane, I guess, about his game. But again, like there's just a lot to be a fan of.
I wonder if he could wind up pushing closer to like early day two rather than the late day two we have, especially if I don't know if he is playing in a summer league, but if he can, like after the season, play in the Cape and do a little bit better than he did last summer. I wonder if that would encourage people and just the steps he's taken as a pure hitter. Because like you said, there is just a lot to like about everything he does on the field pretty well.
Yeah, he isn't signed to play in the Cape right now, but that's a great idea. Like I'm sure that he has a verbal agreement in place with like Orleans to go back, which is where he played last summer, if he wants to. So I think that would be that's a really intriguing thought. I think that would really serve him well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are all the players I had. Peter, did you have any others you wanted to mention here? I'm glad we only had one crossover, and I think that was probably the most obvious one, just given the numbers we had.
Yeah, I was gonna say I had 5, but we both had Bridger home, so I got all my guys.
9 is a great baseball number. So
exactly.
We'll wrap it with that and let you tease out anything you want to plug and then let our listeners get on with their lives.
Yeah. By the time you're listening to this, my weekly What to Watch For will be out. It's kind of the same stuff as business as usual for me. What to Watch For on Friday, Hot Sheet Tuesday, Top 25 with Teddy on Monday, and then two podcasts on Thursday and Friday, respectively, with Teddy and Carlos. So busy, fun times ahead, and I'll be sprinkling in supplemental pieces either weekly or biweekly. And then as we head into the tournament and draft, it's, you know, I'll be flooring it. So it'll be tons of coverage day in and day out.
Yep. And then I'll just plug new draft rankings. Check those out. Top 400 with scouting reports, second mock hit the site. So I'm sure you guys have already all listened or read those if you're listening to this podcast. But those are the two big pieces on the site this week. Next week, I will be off. So we'll have to take a break between our next podcast. But after that, we'll be back with business as usual on the draft show. So yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for supporting Baseball America. And for Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you next time.